Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the third episode of Where Sisters Meet. Today is a really special episode because I have my first guest on the show with me today. I am joined by Sana, who has recently just finished her PGCE training to become a teacher and now, alhamdulillah, has started her first job as a teacher. So, Sana, if you want to introduce yourself.
So Ali and I have been on this journey together. So we started our PGCE training together, and it's really nice to have been able to create such lovely friendships. I think they were the backbone, like they were, it was the rock during all of these like difficult moments. So yeah, thank you again for having me on your podcast.
Honestly, it's been amazing at uni having to meet so many people, one being you and other people. It's just been like, you know, when you're going through a hard phase in uni and studying and there's so much going on, you always have that little, you know, that little group that you can always bounce back to. And it's just like the best feeling ever. You can always share your thoughts and, you know, always help each other out. So, yeah, alhamdulillah, this is the best thing that has come out of, you know, this PhD.
Alhamdulillah.
I mean, I've still got a year left, but alhamdulillah.
Yeah, but you know what? You've done 1 year. So it's always like you've done the PGCE part of it. So
Yeah, I guess so. I think from
yeah.
September onwards it'll be a little bit better.
It will,
Hope so,
inshallah.
actually. Yeah. But how are you feeling? You've started your new job. How are you feeling towards that?
Do you know what? I feel really excited. I'm glad that the PGCE part of everything of, you know, the process is over and the placement is over and we're not trainees anymore. I think that is like the best part, just not being a trainee at a school.
Yeah, it's a big thing. I think being a trainee at a school is such a label because like some mentors really do use you. I've had like a really bad
Definitely.
experience where, well, not the worst experience. I mean, my mentor was lovely, but like sometimes they would kind of use you as an assistant, right? I don't know if you felt that way, but I
100%,
definitely felt that way. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
oh,
definitely.
can you go print something out for me? Oh, can you go take that student down? Like, I'm not an assistant, but okay, I'll do that. I mean, it has its toxic aspects, I guess, right?
No, 100%. I think there is a weird culture of once the trainee is established or established enough to take on a classroom on their own, some mentors do try to use you as cover sometimes or a supply. And the students feed off of that, which is really annoying because the students can see that you're not their, like their real teacher or their, obviously your mentor isn't in or, you know, or is asking you to do like work on the side, like go do the printing, go do this, go do that. It's a bit annoying, really.
Yeah, I used to struggle with that quite a lot. My mentor, she was the best mentor, but like when there was a lot of marking or stuff like that, I would have to like do the marking. She would be like, "Oh, are you doing anything?" And obviously, me being me, I wouldn't say no. So she would just be like, "Here you go, you can mark this. It'll be good for you." And I just can never say no, so I would just be like, "Yeah, it's fine." And yeah, I just have to do it. But I think like as trainees, we need to understand that saying no is okay. Why do we think saying no is such a bad thing? Like we're humans at the end of the day. We have studying to do. We have so much like paperwork to do. So I think for my next placement, I'm definitely going to be more confident in like saying no and saying, look,
Definitely.
I know what I'm doing. I need to do this, this, and this, if that makes sense. But yeah, I think I know where I'm heading, hopefully.
Definitely. I think this whole process teaches you a lot about yourself as well. I think being a teacher in general, just you learn new things about yourself, really, about the way that you handle emotions, the way that you handle things, the way that you deal with people. Like, I think it really teaches you a lot. But definitely, I think being a trainee, learn to put yourself first. I think throughout the whole process, put yourself first. It doesn't matter if you have to make up a few days because you've taken a few days off for whatever reason. It also doesn't matter if you just decide to go home early, you've got nothing to do, because a lot of trainees also just do sit around and don't do anything, and no work is given to them as well. And the work that is given to them, it is just like marking. It's like, I can understand that you will have to mark when you're in ECT, when you're actually a teacher. But at the end of the day, like you're there to learn and you're there to grow. So
Exactly.
yeah, I can understand it can get really frustrating,
I
really
agree. I
frustrating.
agree with everything that you've just said. I think being a trainee, I think Full time and part time is so difficult. It has its pros
Definitely.
and cons. Full time is so full on. I don't know how you do it, but I think part time is so difficult because, yeah, sure, you've got like the 2 days that you're in placement and then you've got the whole week off. But like those 2 days are the only days that you see your mentor. And then, like, what used to happen to me is I used to be there Wednesday, Thursday, and then the Friday, I would just lose contact all the way from to like Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday again. So I would have no contact with my mentor. She wouldn't email me. It would be so difficult. I think that was the biggest challenge. And
No, I can
obviously, as a, like,
imagine.
saying no was just not something I was used to doing. And I think, like, I think because we think we're a trainee, we think we have to just say yes to everything and just sit quiet and just do everything that they say. But like, we forget that it's our training and we to take everything possible from this, like, and learn everything we can. But yeah, I think we forget a lot. And I think the expectations of mentors sometimes really like drags you down because you can feel really low. I know, like, you obviously you had both placements because you're full time, so you probably had like an experience where like one of your mentors like maybe wasn't nice to you. But I haven't really had that experience. But like, yeah, in the beginning it was just like, you know, where email should be happening and that communication should be there, it wasn't there, and it really affected me until I spoke up.
Definitely.
But
Yeah,
yeah.
definitely. Oh, I really agree with you. During my first placement, my experience wasn't the greatest. It wasn't the best. And my mentor, who he wasn't actually my mentor, he was the head of department. But I really struggled to get along with him. And I think from day one, I didn't feel like I was part of the school community, and I didn't feel like they made any effort to involve me into the school community, into the staff community as well.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And there's been times where I remember he would make comments, like we would have staff meetings, or staff briefings, department meetings, sorry, and I would attend, and then he wouldn't like a teacher would ask him, okay, so what is question five of language paper two? What are we setting for question five? And he would look at me and he would say, well, I'm not going to say it now because if one person knows, then everyone knows. And he
Oh,
looked at me as
wow.
he was saying it, yeah, as in thinking that I might go tell someone.
Wow.
I know. And I just think that it's not nice when it's your first placement as well,
Yeah.
because it's just not a good image. It's not a good impression, first impression of himself. But also you want to feel included in your placement schools, because actually when you are an ECT, I do think that when they hire you, they go above and beyond to make you feel really welcome at school,
Yeah.
because they do want to see you perform your best for their students. But that's not really an experience that they teach you during your PGCE. And do you know what? There's something else. I know it's a bit off topic, but sorry, I'm already going on a tangent here. But
No, it's all good.
I was speaking to a few ECTs in my new school, and they had a different provider, so they didn't do it through a university route, and they had the best experience. They had the greatest experience. They loved their training. They literally
Wow.
loved it.
So how did they do it? Was it the IT? What was it?
It's a salaried route, and it's I think what they do, they don't have two separate placements, like two separate like terms, if that makes sense. They do have a second placement. It is compulsory for them to have a second placement, but I think they only go into it for like 6 weeks, or they're not in it for a very long time. And it's quite similar to Teach First, where they have one main placement, so one main school, and they go into a different school for about 6 weeks. I believe it's that, but they do complete it in a year. But they loved their experience. They felt so supported, and they felt really heard. Whereas like our experience with the university-led route was the complete opposite, and it still is the complete opposite. They got their QTS yesterday, and ours is being sent off on July the 14th, meaning we won't get ours back like until in about a week. And they were really chasing me up. Like they were asking me today, like the HR admin lady asked me where my QTS certificate is and why I haven't sent it to her. And I just said, I don't have one.
Oh my God.
I literally don't have one. I'm literally here and I don't have a QTS certificate.
Oh my
But
God.
yeah.
Do you know what? I think the whole the issue, the whole blame, I think I would blame the uni 100% because I've
100%.
had so many issues with them. Their communication is zero. When you
Yeah.
need like something from them, if you've got an issue going on with your placement, they do not reply back.
Yeah,
When
they don't.
you have something important going on, they don't reply back. And sometimes
Yeah.
even the mentor at the uni, sometimes like she wouldn't reply back, and like, where do you stand then? You know,
Yeah, I know
you're
what you
getting all that,
mean.
you're getting all that support from the uni, but really, are you really getting that support? Or is it just like,
Yeah.
oh, we're here to support you, but we can't support you as much because we're busy. And yeah, I've struggled. I think the whole thing is the uni. I think that's why a lot
Yeah.
of people enjoy the PGC, is because they're doing it the other route where they're working like fully and
Exactly,
they don't have the
exactly.
uni aspect. I don't, to be honest, I don't think the uni aspect is important. I don't think you need it. I think just doing the working route is perfect. But obviously, the uni aspect gives you a little bit more like freedom and flexibility and a bit more like, I guess it's a bit more like laid back, and you have
Yeah.
a little bit more free time. You don't like go into teaching like, you know, it's not a bit too much basically. But yeah, I
Yeah,
think the
definitely.
uni definitely like have a lot of they just lack a lot of like communication.
Yeah, especially with part-timers as well. I think with part-timers, they really did let you guys down, I'll be so honest. And even like I was thinking it the other day, like with your graduate, our graduation's in January. When is your graduation? Is it in July? Is it gonna be next January? Like, that's so annoying. Why would you have to wait 2 years just to get,
It's crazy. I think I don't even know where my graduation is. For part-timers, we don't really know anything. Honestly, you just have to chase, and it's just, yeah, it's a big struggle. I think both of us, the biggest struggle, like during our PGC, I think for me, for sure, because I was placed in like a white school, I think for me, it was like me wearing the hijab and like
Definitely.
being a Muslim woman in like a predominantly white school or white area, because I'm from like a whitish area, which like there's no issue with that, but sometimes you do stand out a bit more than other people. And I think like it's hard for Muslim women to, you know, try and build their careers when they're in these sort of spaces where like
Yeah.
Islam isn't practiced and like religions aren't really practiced, and like a lot of the people in my school, they don't really know why I wear the hijab, or what is the hijab, what is that thing on your head, or like this kid in primary school who came up to me, because my school is basically, it's got year 5, year 6, all the way to year 11. So this year 5 kid came up to me, and he was probably a student with SEND, so he had special needs, which I understand. But he's like, why are you wearing that robe? It
Oh my
was
God.
obviously because of my abaya. I was wearing an abaya, and I just explained to him, because like it's so sad though, like kids are not educated enough that they don't even understand why certain women, Muslim women, wear certain modest clothing. Like, is the
Yeah.
bare minimum that like parents or teachers should teach them, but they're not taught. What's
Yeah.
your experience in like, you know, your training? Did you like face any like discrimination
Yeah.
or any challenges because of like your hijab?
I completely agree with you. I mean, it is really sad to see that students aren't, or like kids, children just aren't taught the bare minimum of clothing or of religious choices. But also, yeah, like I experienced quite a bit of it as well. And my first placement was really diverse. It was in a really nice area, and right in the heart of like, our town. So it was really nice. It was lovely. The students were lovely as well. But the second placement was the complete opposite. The behaviour was really challenging in that school. And the school was predominantly, majority, it was a certain demographic. It was all white, obviously. And majority didn't follow a religion. And I think because of the catchment area and just because of the way, the students obviously did have, some of them did have quite troubling backgrounds. And a lot of what they would repeat in lessons were what they were told at home. So it was what they were told by their parents or by their dads, and they would just repeat it in lessons at school because they didn't have anyone around them to challenge them. So for example, we were teaching a lesson on immigration. So we both teach English, obviously. So I was teaching immigration and war and why immigration happened. Why immigrants choose to come to a better, a developed country. And while when I was explaining it to them, a few of them at the back, obviously the white students at the back just kind of turned around and said, "Well, all Muslims are terrorists. Muslims should just go back."
Oh,
And
wow.
they even said, they one of them even put their hand up and said, "Well, tell them to go back," sort of thing.
Oh, my
And
God.
I know, so in that moment, I tried really hard to understand, for them to understand that it's actually not so easy to come back, to go back, sorry, and there is a reason why they come here, and that their lives aren't just the easiest lives in the world just because they've come to a different country. Like, they'd still do really struggle here in the UK. And I really tried to tell them that immigrants, even though they can't speak the language, and I can understand it can get, maybe it can get quite frustrating for some to, if someone doesn't understand what you're saying, if you don't understand what someone's saying, someone doesn't understand what you're saying, but they do really try. Immigrants do really try. And that all of our parents have had very different experiences in life, and we've all been brought up differently, so we need to like respect and tolerate each other's views, and just show each other love and just, respect in a classroom as well. And they just didn't get it. And then there's been a few other comments about, like, one about Nigel Farage as well.
Well, okay.
And then there was a few comments made about my hijab, which was like, it's just not nice to hear that coming from a student as well,
No.
when you are kind of doing them a service, you're teaching them, and if their behavior, if they don't respect teachers, they don't, their behavior is just so appalling, and they make such rude comments about you and Islamophobic comments too. It's so horrible. But also, I just felt like with all of those comments that were made, so for example, the comments about Muslims being terrorists and immigration, and then the comment, the Nigel Farage comment, I didn't feel like they were really tackled by teachers. Teachers still chose to present a neutral view and still sort of allowed for those comments to take place in the classroom. They never really shut it down. The hijab comment was a bit different. So, because I really pushed it, I told the university straight away. They did contact home, and they did contact SLT as well. But again, it was just sort of brushed under the rug. Like, nothing really came of it. Nothing really happened after. The university forgot about it too. Yeah, not really a pleasant experience.
No, I can tell, like, because this makes like a big difference to like how you teach and like how comfortable you are in the school or the place that you won't feel confident if you know in that class there are people who judge you or look at you in a certain way. Because I know for sure, like some of my classes, I teach year 9, year 10s, and when I was teaching them, I think year 10s were a bit more scary because like, there was like predominantly white people in that class, and I'm just there thinking, what do they think about me? I wear the I started wearing that abaya to school recently, and it's been the best thing for me. But when I first put it on, I was so scared about like how others would perceive me or like look at me, what they think about me, because the hijab is like it's okay, like it's on your head, fine. They understand that you can't show your hair, but then when you start covering more and when you wear the abaya or like something loose, they're like, okay, what's going on here? And they get confused. I remember even my mentor, she's not racist, but I think she doesn't seem like directly racist, but she said comments to me. I won't repeat the comments, but like she said like comments to me about like other students about how they're immigrants and stuff like that, and, where they've come
Oh,
from.
wow.
Yeah, it's it, like she's outright like said stuff to me, and I've really questioned that. And it's so hard when you work with people like that. Also, like, not even about discrimination, it's just so hard being a Muslim in like a white school or even any school because, like, back in London, there'd be like multicultural schools everywhere. Like, you'll get more Pakistanis, Indians, black people, and then less of white people there. So in our town, it's mostly like white or European, but in some areas there's like obviously Pakistanis, Indians and stuff like that. But like, compared to like London, if we were living in London, it's very different. And in schools, obviously we live in a Christian country, and in schools you celebrate Christmas and stuff like that. And did you, because I know I went through this, I went through a phase where like in December, obviously it was Christmas, everyone was giving Christmas cards, everyone was celebrating it, everyone was saying, Merry Christmas, and we don't do that kind of stuff. And it was really difficult going through that process because, like, you kind of had to avoid being in the staff room at that moment or on, around that time because you didn't want them to, like, judge you or, like, question, why are you not with us kind of thing, or why are you not celebrating? Why are you not, doing Secret Santa kind of thing? Did you, because I know I felt that. I think this is something that I deal with a lot, like even birthdays, because I've like recently stopped celebrating birthdays. Like I struggle a lot with that aspect and how like I'm Muslim and my beliefs and everything, and like like they don't celebrate Ramadan and stuff like that. Like trying to gauge all of that in like a non-Muslim school is really hard. But did like you go through that in your schools? Like did you face something similar?
To be honest, we at my schools, we never really had a staff room culture. So like we yeah our, it was really weird because both placement schools, now that I think about it, they didn't have that culture where like when it was like Easter or Christmas, they were being like, they were celebrating it, or they were, especially not my second placement, I'll be honest to you, even though it was predominantly white, I think most of them just didn't have a religion. So they didn't really emphasize that it's, oh, it's Easter, oh, it's Christmas, oh, it's, they really didn't emphasize any of it, which is really surprising actually. But I do feel like with my second placement, so when we were teaching Greek mythology, it was one of like it was in the curriculum for year sevens, I believe. So I can understand they are quite young. But obviously it ties in a lot with religion. So Greek mythology has a lot of its influence comes from religion. And I really try to explain to them about different religions. I thought it's a really great opportunity to try and get them to like they can relate, they can understand this a bit easier if they relate it to what they know about certain religions, what they're learning in RE, for example. So I try to break it down to them about, believing in one god or believing in many gods. I spoke to them about different religions and how different religions have different stories and beliefs, and try to link it to Greek mythology, and they just did not get it. They honestly did not get it. And every lesson, there were about two or three students that would just say, "Well, none of this is real. Why are we learning it? It's not real. It's not real." And I think it's that attitude to learning that really, like it, they don't really want to learn about anything. So even with learning about immigration, even learning about religion, anything that doesn't apply to them, they refuse to learn about. And I think it is a reflection, perhaps, of what they see at home. I think at home, with a lot of predominantly sort of white areas that are sort of working class, their reading ages don't go above or beyond the age of 9. So when the teacher at the school told me that, I was so shocked because obviously, like, even my dad always says that, oh, like, white people are really smart because they're really good at fluency, they're really good at speaking. But that doesn't necessarily reflect their academic and their reading age. And some of them have a really low reading age because they dropped out of school really young. And when they have children and they don't share any love of learning with their children, it really does reflect. It really reflects on their kids, and their children come to school thinking, "I don't need to learn about anything. School isn't important, and also none of this applies to me." And those parents are the ones who will read Daily Mail or will read The Sun. They don't understand like media literacy, and they don't understand that the media isn't 100% correct, and it is very biased. Anyways, sorry, that's a bit of a different
No,
topic, but they,
do you know what? I 100% agree with you.
yeah.
Like media plays like a big part in everyone's life, especially nowadays in 2025. Media and social media and TikTok and all these platforms are just like it's the trend now. Like you have to be on every single platform, and like literally Google is not Google anymore. We don't use Google. We use TikTok to Google everything.
Exactly,
If that makes sense. I saw my friend the other day, not the other day, like the last time I met her. We were trying to find out where to go, like where to eat, and she's like, "Oh, let me TikTok it." And I'm like, "What do you mean TikTok? TikTok is
Literally,
literally the new Google. Like
yeah.
these apps, and like I feel like the kids nowadays, they just Yeah, I think they their brains are just functioning in such a different way because the act of like social media and digital world and nothing is
Yeah.
books anymore. We don't read books anymore. Why don't the kids sit down and read books? Why don't they go outside and play? They're always on a device or something. And I feel like, as you were saying, like it really affects their learning. They feel like, oh, I can just, go into something else.
Definitely.
I don't need to have math, English, or science. Like, what is that going to do for me? I'm just going to be working later anyway. I'm just going to, go to a different country. So why do I need any of this? And they just don't understand, like, all of these subjects mean a lot, especially when you want to even do anything in life. It will literally, you need all of these things, even if it's
Yeah.
that you won't carry on in life. So even if you don't do science in life, you need to get something, especially maths and English. But people think, oh,
Yeah.
English is so boring, I don't need to know any of this. But I think you do, especially like even
Yeah.
love for reading. You need to learn how to like read and like the importance of reading. Like I think we've lost that in this day and age. Like even just
100%.
picking up a book, like we have Kindles nowadays and like
Yeah.
iPads, and you can read everything online, PDF versions. And
Yeah.
yeah, I think like the whole, like the
Yeah.
traditional way of like reading a book and just sitting in the library.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is so lost. And
It's
it's
gone.
sad because when you, us as English teachers, when you try and get the kids to read, they don't know how to read anymore.
No, they
And
don't.
it's just sad because like you're kind of raising kids to be, all digital. And yeah, it's good to be techie and all of this, but like to an extent, right? Like they need to learn how to read, write, and just enjoy that as well. The simple things in life. And I think that does reflect on like their values, their beliefs. Because if you do sit on social media and all of this online 24/7, you will adopt weird beliefs. And as you said, like
Yeah.
the newspapers that really don't show the other side of things.
Yeah, so we learned this in A level sociology, but this concept of, I can't remember the name, but it's I don't remember the theorist who did this either. I just remember that there's this theory that students who have who come from who have immigrant parents, they because I can't explain it. The only way I can explain it is that because they view their parents as authoritative figures, or they have that level of authority that they know their parents have with them, that reflects onto the way that they respect teachers at school. And that's why often some students with immigrant parents, you might see them respecting teachers more at school, or yeah, treating teachers with more respect at school than students who don't have immigrant parents, or than students who have parents who are from the UK, or were just raised. And that's because the way that the education system is back home in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, or even in like Romania and Poland, it's very authoritative. It's very much sort of the teacher has all the authority in the classroom, and the students are quite passive, and they sit and they learn and they memorize. And it does make a lot of sense. You see a lot of that because I do feel like my current school now, alhamdulillah, the behavior is amazing, and I do see a lot of that reflected in just their background. I mean, they are from backgrounds where authority is really respected, and being a professional in a professional environment is really respected as well. And because their parents instill that in them from such an early age, they also grow up to respect teachers a lot more. So when they are being disrespectful, they do have some challenging behavior. Most of it isn't really directed towards teachers, it's just within themselves and perhaps the way they act. Whereas in the school, in the placement that I was at, it was obviously predominantly, it was a very different demographic, and the students did not have parents who were immigrants, and they were all from this country, and maybe their parents had dropped out of school when they were 12 or 13. They really did not respect teachers. They honestly had no concept of respecting teachers. They would barge past teachers, they would shove teachers, they would swear like in front of teachers, and there really wasn't any concept of like just control and self-discipline at all. But also, you would like when a teacher was taking the register, they would say, "Huh, yeah. And then we would have to remind them it's yes, miss to you. It's not yeah, it's not what, it's yes, miss. And they refuse to say yes, miss. And I honestly, I just think that it's that, it's what they learn at home. And if they don't see it encouraged at home, they won't see it. They won't reflect on it. They won't behave like that at school either.
Do you know what? I totally agree with you. I think it's the whole respect and culture thing. Like in different cultures, we know to respect our parents or know to respect an elder. And yeah, like, that is a big thing in our culture. I think for sure in this country, a lot of the kids lack the respect. I think especially white kids. Also, like, we are not racist at all. We are literally just telling our experiences about what we've seen in schools. And I think it's a big thing and it should be talked about, especially the respect that teachers don't get. I think it's just, yeah, I don't know why kids think it's okay to disrespect teachers, call names, be rude to them. I know, because like I work as a supply teacher as well in the same school that I do the placement at, and despite knowing the kids and despite the kids seeing me, some of them are still rude to me. So if I was to tell them, stop talking while I'm talking, or like, get out of the classroom because you've been very disruptive, so you need to leave, they will just, regardless of who they are speaking to, they don't care. They will be rude to you. They will swear at you. They will just say names. They will answer back straight away. They don't care. And I think it just goes down to like what they learn at home. And maybe there's abuse or something going on at home, because I feel like it all starts from the home. Learning starts from home and influences start from the house and what you pick up on. And then obviously your peers and everything. So I think teachers don't get enough respect, and really and truly we should get respect because of, the effort we do above and beyond, and like sometimes it's just forgotten that we do this much effort. And I really hope that we can get into it, because inshallah we can just, people can recognize and the kids can recognize, because it's nice when the
Inshallah.
kids be like, okay, like, I love this teacher, she's amazing, or like, this is why she's amazing, or like, I can really talk to her about like my life as well. Like if I'm going through something, I can talk to this teacher. And yeah, a lot of kids just don't see that. But yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think just building relationships with students when they know that you don't look like them, especially when you're wearing the hijab,
Oh, yeah.
is really difficult. I think that is a massive struggle in itself because I really struggle to build good relationships or like positive relationships with those students in my classrooms
Oh,
who,
wow, really?
yeah, I mean, it took like I was in that school for about 7 months and I didn't feel like I had any connection with the students at all,
Oh, my
which is
God.
really sad, yeah, because I developed a really strong attack like connection with my students in my first placement after just teaching them for 2 weeks, and I was so sad to like see them go, and I actually really miss teaching them, but like the I think a lot of that really does again does come from the fact that they don't see someone that looks like you at home, and I think because they don't see that, they automatically just don't respect you. I truly think they just don't respect you because it's internalized in some students. It really is just internalized in them that you don't look like me, so I'm not going to respect you. And those are the people that grow up, become adults, and don't respect people based on their skin color or the way they look or the way they dress.
I completely agree with what you're saying. Like, you look different. Like, obviously, I wear the abaya and you dress nicely as well. And like, when you look different to them, it's a bit hard. I think because I didn't wear the abaya full time straight away in my first placement, and because I was there for a year, they obviously physically saw that change on me when I stopped wearing short dresses and leggings, and I turned to like abayas and modest clothes. And obviously, like, a lot of them were probably like confused, like, what is happening to her? But alhamdulillah, you just have to really
Alhamdulillah.
show them who you are. It's hard in a school where like you're trying to show like what you believe in, like the culture you come from and the religion, and the festivals that like Eid and Ramadan, where like you can't celebrate properly. But I try my best to like educate everyone. So like in my year 10 class and in my year 9 class, I make sure to tell them when it was Ramadan, I made sure to tell them, you know, if anyone is celebrating, I pray you have a good Ramadan. And you know, this is where we fast. So I understand if some people might be low on energy, even though I know in the year 9 class, there's no Muslims, but I know some of them know about Islam and they know about me. So I'm just there
Yeah.
because I'm not gonna lie, I feel like I have a big responsibility. I think all of us as Muslims, we have a responsibility to educate others.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are oblivious to the fact that, you know, we are Muslims and all of them think that we are terrorists and we do like bad stuff, but that's not us. There's so much
Yeah.
more to us, and you know, like a lot of things they don't see the peace behind
Yeah.
religion and the, you know, that amazing religion it is. They just see the news headlines and all of that, and it's just I try my best for sure. And advice for you as well, and anyone out there listening, if you're a teacher or if you're in a workplace where you can make an impact, I would, and like you should, because like for you, Sana, like you're gonna have your own classroom and you
Yeah.
probably are in a, are you in a Muslim, like mostly Muslim,
Yeah.
right? Yeah, so actually
Yeah.
it would be nice for you because you can actually decorate your classroom for like Ramadan and Eid. And I actually, like, inshallah, when I finish
Inshallah.
and get my own classroom, regardless if it's a white or non, like a non-white, sorry, a white school or like a mixed school, I will make sure to educate people on like Islam and like the beauty behind it, and you know,
Yeah.
putting up decorations for like Eid and Ramadan, because it's not fair that others get to celebrate Christmas and we don't get to celebrate ours, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we as teachers hold a responsibility to educate them, not just in the subject that we teach, but also everything else. Like we are shaping these individuals. We want them to come
Yeah.
as nice and kind and educated as they should be. So I
Yeah.
think for me, when I finish and when I do get a job, inshallah, whenever that is,
Inshallah.
I just want to make sure that regardless of what I'm teaching, I want to make sure that the people they become are kind-hearted, nice people who, you know, accept
Yeah.
everyone regardless of what color their skin is, what language they speak, if they've come from a different country or their religion, because a lot of people are discriminated and it's not nice, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And
Yeah.
I your points, like everything you said is amazing, and I really like I want to add to that and just say that I also just want my students to just know that there are like they're not the only There is a whole world outside of school. Like your whole life isn't just school.
Yeah.
And your life actually really only begins when you leave school and when you go and join that apprenticeship or work that job or go to university. That's when your life will really begin. And
Yeah.
that's when you're really tested in your life as well, I think. Because even my current school now, although it's a Muslim majority, I did, even in my interview, I did really say that really want my students to know that nothing is stopping them from achieving the best. Like they can go to any Ross Group University,
Yeah.
they can achieve the best. Nothing will ever come their way. Nothing will ever stop them. Their skin color or their religion will never stop them from achieving the best. But I also want to remind them that they're very lucky to be in a school that's a Muslim majority school where they feel comfortable to wear, you know, shalwar kameez, or they feel comfortable to wear the hijab. They feel
Yeah.
comfortable to wear an abaya, because sometimes especially in obviously like in the UK, that's not the case. And I'm only saying that because I went to a Muslim majority school when I was younger. My secondary school was all Muslims, and when I went to university, it was a massive shock to see so many white people.
Oh, wow,
But
really?
also, yeah.
Wow.
Like in my seminars, I was the only hijabi, and I honestly felt really judged when I would like say anything that was, when I would talk about Palestine, for example. I genuinely I'd feel really judged, and I felt like I just didn't belong there.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, they're also very like cliquey as well. And even our seminar lead at one point told all of them off because she said, "Look, you're all in your own little bubble. You need to get out of your little bubble and start mixing around, because
Yeah.
not just segregating yourself so much that, like, you know, the posh white kids were all in their own little bubble. Then it was the immigrants that came from secondary, like state secondary schools, that were
Yeah.
in their own little bubble, and it was really weird. There was a massive divide, and they never mingled.
Yeah.
And
That happens quite a lot in like high
it
school, doesn't
does,
it? So many schools,
yeah.
it's so difficult sometimes, but
And it,
like, what
yeah,
can you
it.
do really?
Exactly. It carries on to university
Yeah.
and the workplace as well. But I really want to teach my students that is to just to be aware of that, but never let that bring you down, as in that
Yeah.
it should never come the way of you just achieving the best for yourself.
Succeeding in life. Yeah, exactly.
And
Yeah.
like even amongst staff sometimes you will notice that. You will notice that behavior. You will feel a bit singled out because you dress differently, you look a bit
Yeah.
different.
No,
But
I've seen
again,
that happen as well, 100%. I agree.
100%.
And it's just something that we have to live with, where we're always like, pushed to the side kind of thing, and we're always like left out. And I guess like it's just something because obviously we're not going to shut our beliefs down. I believe so strongly about our religion, and we have certain beliefs that we can't compromise against. So I guess it's just a struggle of trying to find the balance and not compromising your religion and what you believe in. To just like socialize, if that makes sense. I know it's so difficult. Like I find it really hard sometimes, but I think what's easier is to just not be in that environment. So like my staff room at the placement that I was just in, sometimes the stuff they would talk about was really like inappropriate and stuff. So yeah, it's difficult sometimes to not put yourself in that environment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it is unfortunate because they like it's difficult because they're just like they're co-workers at the end of the day, and they don't really you can't re like you kind of have to like just, be nice to them, which is like really annoying.
Yeah,
But
it's difficult, but like we have to try our best to like find that balance, I guess. We can't really do much. Well, at the end of the day, we live in a Christian country, a Catholic country, and we really can't do much, I guess. We'll always be struggling, but as long as we are like on deen and we push ourselves to be better Muslims and that's it, and educate other people around us, we'll be fine. As long as we're on the straight path, that's it. But I feel like we should
100%.
literally, I think we should do loads more episodes because I
I
know
think so
for a fact
too.
we have so much to talk about.
I know,
And
I know.
I think definitely like we'll do like more episodes on different topics because like hijab in itself or like stereotypes and stuff, there's so much to talk about.
I know, honestly.
I think we'll end this episode on three questions. So one question would be to you, and then the other two questions were from other people who have asked us questions. So the first question was, so for you, what advice would you give to younger Muslims facing, so younger Muslim women facing similar struggles, or what advice would you like basically give to a younger Muslim teenager and like her life and how she's going about like high school and the struggles that she's facing, the discrimination?
Well, the first test I would say, the first thing I would say is that this life is just a test. It's a massive test, and for some Muslim women, wearing the hijab is a really big test in itself. And it is definitely really testing when you're in an environment where you look very different, you don't feel very included, you don't feel pretty enough either. But that is a test that Allah has given to you, and just hold on tight to who you are. Hold on tight to your deen. Don't ever lose that, because if you lose that, you'll end up losing yourself in that process. But also just own yourself, like especially for Muslim teachers who wear the hijab, who might feel a little bit sort of insecure, just own it. Literally get up there and say, I'm Muslim, so I believe in this. You might believe in something different, that's fine, but just own yourself. And that's one of the best bits of advice that my mentor gave to me in my second placement. She was really supportive, bless her, and she told me just to own it, like just get up there and just be honest to the students, and if you're honest to them, they will never pick on you on something that you are proud of yourself, because they'll know that you're proud of that you're happy about that. They can't really pick on that to hurt you. And it's just general life advice. If you're really happy about who you are, you own yourself.
I
People will never
absolutely
pick on
love
you.
like what you've just said, like your advice and everything has like is literally what I would have said. So yeah, just be true to yourself and don't ever let go of the deen and hold on tight to it because that's who you are and don't ever compromise yourself for other people. I know like as a young Muslim it's very hard sometimes, but you got this, and inshallah, it will work out. And you just have to surround yourself around, people just like you. If you surround yourself with other people who don't like have the same interests or beliefs or anything, then it will bring you down, if that makes sense. As you get older,
Definitely.
you should surround yourself with people who you want to be around, people who are on deen, who want to, do better in life Islamically and, even outside of religion too. But I love
Yeah.
that. Inshallah, everyone benefits from that. Thanks for
Thank
that.
you, Inshallah. Thank you.
So we
Yeah.
have two more reflection questions, just quickly. So first one, what are some of your favorite things in Islam? So we'll do one each. So my one would be the mercy of Allah. And why I say that is because I swear, in the Quran, there's so many places where it says, regardless of how many sins that you've done or committed or whatever you've done in life, you will always be forgiven, as long as you repent and as long as you ask for forgiveness, or even if you take that one step towards Allah, so many doors will open up. And I really believe that Allah is the most merciful, and I've seen that happen so
Yeah.
many times where I fall back on my prayer and I don't pray, and there'll be months where I don't pray or wake up for Fajr, and then that one day that I finally started to wake up for Fajr, it really changes everything. And
Yeah.
I truly believe in that. That's the most beautiful thing about Islam, I think, for me. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you, the mercy of Allah, and also just to be resilient as well. I think Islam teaches us to be really resilient in ourselves and just to face any test and any bit of hardship and just like sort of believe in ourselves. And I love that. I think it applies to everything in life, everything you go through in life. You just have to be resilient and just go through it because you will be rewarded for it in this life or the next life, inshallah.
Yeah, inshallah. I love
Yeah.
that. It's so true. And for me as well, I take on your advice. You give the best advice. So thank
Oh,
you
you
for that.
too.
No,
You
honestly,
too.
I appreciate that. Okay, so the last reflection of this episode. So one question I got was an Islamic reminder that stuck with you and feel others would benefit from. So one thing I would really say, I think I've learned this from my Quran sessions or my Quran teacher. She is amazing, absolutely amazing, amazing. She's always said, whatever you do in life, make sure you have the intention behind it, even if it is studying or going shopping or wearing nice new clothes or reading the Quran or having the intention to go to Umrah or anything. Intention is everything, because I know Shaitan is always there behind you and he will trick you so many times. If you have the intention, if you act upon it, then Allah will protect you and guide you.
Yeah.
And even having the intention is kind of like a promise to yourself and to Allah that I will do this kind of thing. And I'm setting
Yeah.
myself, this challenge, and I'm going to do this. And yeah, I think it's the biggest thing. So whenever I'm learning a new surah or memorizing something, I will always make the intention, say, I'm memorizing this for the sake of me bettering myself in terms of deen or anything. So yeah, inshallah,
100%.
that helps. But do you have an Islamic reminder or something, or a quote or anything, or a verse from the Quran that any that you have stood by that has helped you?
I love what you said. The intention part is so important.
Yeah.
And I think even just the intention to do something good, like wear the hijab, it still
Yeah.
counts,
Yeah.
which is really nice. And also just probably just that Allah doesn't burden us all beyond what it can bear. And meaning like Allah has written out all of your tests for you and all of your hardships for you, and it can't go anything beyond. He knows what your limit is, what you can't, what will be too difficult for you. So think of every hardship that Allah has given to you and every test. If you're going through anything right now, it's something that's written for you and it's something that Allah knows that you can overcome.
No, I absolutely love that. It's nice getting both of our viewpoints as well. It's really nice having, because this is my first episode having someone on this podcast. So it's nice having to take a little bit of a back seat and hear what you have to say. And it's nice hearing your perspective on life, on everything, and it's so refreshing.
Honestly, the PGCE, although it was really difficult, like we've met some amazing, I met you and some amazing friends as well, and it's worked out for the best, honestly, alhamdulillah. So
Yeah.
yeah.
Inshallah, we will see you guys on the next episode. And inshallah, maybe you can see Sana on the next episode. We will see. But look after yourselves and have an amazing week. And inshallah, this episode has benefited you guys. And take care of yourselves. Assalamu alaikum.